Tales, the podcast. We are your hosts, Tyler, Sean.
Hi, that's basically what PJ's coming at you.
And Duane.
Yeah.
There it is. Yeah. And today, we're going to talk about the phenomenon and legacy of the Alien franchise. Gasp. So, Sean.
Yes.
Start us out.
So I actually have a story about this because this is funny. Back when I lived in Orange Park and I was probably, my brother's 6 years younger than me, I would have been probably somewhere in middle school. He would have been late elementary school, I want to say, or middle elementary school. My parents, I don't think they were watching Alien for the first time. I think they had just rented it for the hell of it. And I was not a big horror fan. I didn't like watching rated R movies. I just kind of, that wasn't my thing. I liked Mega Man, you know? So, I think I had been watching it, but I was just like, this is fucking boring. Like, I don't need whatever. And so, but it was funny because my dad was like, hey, Ryan, you want to watch this? And he might have been in double digits age, probably not. My dad's like, and I don't know if he was joking. I don't know if he was serious. I can't remember the context, but my dad was like, hey, you can watch this. It's just, it's no scarier than Krang on the Turtles. And
lies.
Thinking back on that statement, I'm like, yeah, Krang's kind of fucking weird and gross. But it's a cartoon character and he's just a maniacal villain. Whereas Alien is the face hugger was, I think, what he was specifically talking about. And the face hugger is gross and scary and nasty and like that. And we're just talking about Alien at this time. So, you know, you're talking about a dude in a rubber suit and a little animatronic, like, you know, thing that wraps around your neck and impregnates you with weird stuff. So yeah, it's one of those things you look back on, you go, I know I can ask my dad about this. He might remember, but I don't know if he'll remember if he was joking or if he wasn't joking, and I can't remember it either. So the context is just kind of lost, but I do remember at a very young age, my dad was like, hey, Sean's brother, I don't know if I want to name him, whatever, you know, hey, Ryan, you want to watch this? It's no scarier than Krang. And I was just like, and I remember my brother just going and crying and going back to his room. And then I just went and played Final Fantasy or Mega Man or whatever it was at the time. And that is my first experience with Alien. And I probably wouldn't see it again or like deal with it again until many, many years later. Probably late teens, early 20s or something like that. I don't know when I first watched Alien, but I know I want to say Aliens was the first one that I saw.
That's how it was for me.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So, first off, I will say, hopefully your dad was joking because he's wildly incorrect.
Annotations
of what that thing is doing to you, which we shouldn't tread too deeply into because it's gross. But what it's doing to you is a lot worse than what Krang does to you.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's one of those things where you look back and go, my dad was just probably fucking around, but, you know, I don't know.
My inaugural story with the franchise is I always had a regular babysitter when I was a kid, except, you know, every great once in a while, your regular babysitter can't make it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever was going on, I don't know, because I was too young to remember. My parents had to do the thing, so they had to get a babysitter. So they went through the backup babysitter and then the backup's backup babysitter. And the backup's babysitter, which was another person from the church I grew up with, her daughter. It's like, my best friend down the street can do it. Her best friend down the street was nothing like my parents' circle. So they took me over there and they're like, we rented this tonight. You want to get some popcorn and watch it with us? And I'm like, yes. I was 7. I saw it its entirety when I was 7. And also remember, that was 1985. No, 3. Yeah. 1984. So it was pretty realistic to me at 7.
Yeah, I don't remember what age I originally saw Aliens, because Aliens was the first movie that I did see. I know that I was young, but me and my dad would always watch sci-fi movies together all the time. Everybody else would go to bed. We'd watch weird sci-fi movies.
I never told my parents either. I'm just like, I went home and they're like, you okay? Because I was like shell-shocked the whole time. I'm like, I'm just tired.
I remember Aliens 3 coming out, and it was my friend's birthday. It was coming out on his birthday weekend, and they were like, his mom asked me, hey, do your parents let you watch rated R movies? And my parents never said yes or no to me about rated R movies. My parents just always loved movies, so we just kind of watch movies without the context of a rating system. And so I was just like, yeah, sure. And we never went to go see Alien 3. I don't know if like his mom called my mom behind my back and then like found out my mom was like, no, don't take him to see that or something. I don't know. I never got the story, but we never got to see Aliens, or we never saw Alien 3. I don't remember what we saw instead, but I think it was probably worsely violent, more violent than Alien 3, because, you know, 90s movies.
Alien 3 was actually pretty unviolent for the franchise, yeah.
Yeah, because I saw that one probably on DVD. It might have just been a random DVD, or I might have saw it on HBO or something in college, because I had HBO as a free channel. So that sounds, I don't think I saw it until then. But yeah, I had definitely seen Aliens first, and then I went back and saw Alien. And I probably sat and watched that with my parents at some point finally, and just watched it and was like, oh, geez, this kind of fucked up. Yeah, so Alien, it's one of those, I know everybody loves it, and I know when you say Alien, everyone's like, oh, the Xenomorph and all that, but I feel like it's a low-key sort of franchise. Like, it's not, it's like a B or C-lister franchise as far as,
it is
like,
technically a B-lister.
Yeah, like, it's one of those things, everybody has an attachment to it, but it's not like, you know, you got Star Wars and Star Trek and all those, and those few others at the top, but then like Aliens definitely like a B plus player. It's not something that stands out all that much, and is usually considered, I want to say, like sort of a schlock film, even though it's not. Like, it's just kind of like, oh yeah, another alien movie.
Well,
chestbursters.
That's where we should do our little mini deep dive and talk about how, for someone on the outside who only watches the movies, that probably sounds true, but the franchise is fucking massive. Crazy.
Yeah, mess. Like that's what I'm saying. Like, the franchise is fucking huge, but to sort of the masses, it's just, oh yeah, you know. So tell Dwayne. Us.
Yes.
Well, actually, I was going to say, should you or I, but I'll start with the part we were talking about before the show.
You know, I will say, I will add before you guys go into, I didn't realize like this was a Ridley Scott like brain hole thing. I didn't realize like this is all him, more or less. I had no idea.
Well, he had written the script for it, and you know, obviously the story plays a good impact in it, but what Tyler brought up before we were talking about in the show, it's the actual artwork and the creepiness that it brings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was designed by H.R. Giger, who was a Swiss artist. The original idea came from a lithograph called Necronom 4, because, well, you guess what that was based on. Everything comes back to tentacles. When they wrote the script, it was just supposed to be a monster movie. Like, they didn't really know what they were doing or how it was going to come, or just Ridley Scott's like, I'm going to do a monster movie. But Carlo Rambaldi, the special effects designer, was Italian, so he knew about Geiger. And he's like, check this out, we should make it look like this. And that's why the franchise exploded, is because of the alien. The story itself is just another. I will say, even at the time, some of its cast was amazing. Like Tom, what's his last name?
Tom, it's not, I want to say Skerritt, but that's not how you pronounce it. But it's something like that.
Yeah. Like he was kind of big then.
He was in Top Gun. What was his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is Tom Skerritt.
Yeah. It is Tom Skerritt. Damn. Yes. Pulled it off.
He was kind of big then, and of course, you know, the guy who got chest bursted was huge. He's the doctor.
God, why can't we remember any of these? It's Anthony. No, it's not Anthony Hopkins. It's Ian Holm. It's Ian Holm.
Yeah, Ian Holm.
It's fucking Bilbo Baggins gets chest bursted.
Ian Holm? What?
Yeah, Ian Holm.
I don't
think the guy who played Kane.
Kane didn't get no. I'm thinking of
Not Kane. Yeah,
Kane didn't get chest bursted. I'm talking about John Hurt.
Oh yeah, God, that was John Hurt.
John Hurt got chest.
John Hurt.
Kane was the android, but again, that's just telling us
the cast
was pretty big for the time because three of the people were famous, but it would never have been as big as it was if it hadn't been for that art. So H.R. Giger, a lot of his art looks like that, idea, because his big thing was female anatomy with biomechanical augmentation, striking terror because of the unnaturalness of it, and it worked, which is also why the chest burster's proboscis looks like it, or not the chest burster, the facehugger's proboscis looks like it does. Female anatomy again. And it's part of that was a reversal of roles, you know, assaulted by the feminine instead of the masculine, which again is part of why it was as big as it was, because that kind of horror messed with a lot of 70s dudes. But that's actually how it started out. And they actually created like a whole thing for it. I don't know how much of it existed in the 79 script, but by the time they got to Aliens, like, they had given it a number, and it even had like a finger quotes name, Xenomorph XX121 Internecivus raptus. I don't even know how to say it.
Jesus.
An endoparasitoid. So I'm gonna let Dwayne jump in and talk a little bit.
Oh, the endoparasitoid, the facehugger.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is called endoparasitoid because of its cycle. That covers the species, not just one creature. Yeah.
Correct. Much like that one bug that shoots its larva into ants.
Correct. So Dwayne, you can talk to us about the 79 movie a little.
The 79 movie, huh? Making me go way back. Well, the 79 movie came out before I was born. it was directed by Ridley Scott and screenwritten by Dan O'Bannon. And of course, like Tyler said, the artwork done by Giger. The main precipice for anyone who hasn't seen it, spoilers ahead. Precipice is a space freighter that is hauling mining ore.
All right, let's test him. What's its name?
The Nostromo.
Well done. Carry on.
returning back to Earth. And in the middle of their flight, the computer hears a signal of unknown origin, and it is the company's policy that they are to investigate. So everyone is woken up out of cryosleep, and they go and land on LV-426, at which point some of the crew members depart the ship and find a derelict craft.
Ooh.
So ominous. Investigation ensues, in which for the individuals who have never seen the later movie or the earlier movies, but are well-versed in Prometheus, that specific scene where the engineer is getting into the flight chair and all of that cool armor comes up over his face, they find one of those engineers in an engineer ship, which is the derelict ship, with something coming out of its chest. And exploring the cargo hold, they find an entire cargo hold full of, what is the correct term for those?
Eggs?
No, there is an actual, Odds? There is an actual correct term for it. It's not a xenopolyp. What is it?
You're talking about the facehugger, yes?
No, yeah. No, the actual egg. There's an actual correct term.
Oh, you're talking about the egg itself.
I cannot remember for the life of me.
So quick side story while you look for that. I was reading the Dune trivia on IMDb last night, and because we were playing Dune the other night. And I found, I don't know how much of it's true or not, but apparently a lot of the design crew, including H.R. Giger, was on Jodorowsky's Dune version of Dune, which failed. And then they all just carried over to Ridley Scott's Aliens because the timeline kind of lined up.
Yeah, that is accurate. And ovomorph is the word you're looking
ovomorph.
For.
Ovomorph. Or egg.
Ovomorph.
Yeah, ovomorph. I knew it had something to do with the egg. I can. At which point, not Kane.
Yeah. Poor John Hurt.
Yeah, poor John Hurt stuck his face in front of one of the eggs and was attacked by a facehugger, thus brought back to the ship. Tests were run on him. it ends up falling off and dying.
By the way, his name is Kane. You're actually right on the
name. Yeah, I thought I was right. Yeah,
because you're incorrect on the actor. The android was Ash.
Android was Ian Holm. It was Ash.
Kane was John Hurt in the movie.
And this is where I turn into Sigourney Weaver. Kane seemed fine.
Yep.
It must have laid something in his. It had come and then it burst out and there was blood. Yes. thus is born the chest burster. What is significant about Alien is that there is only one, hence the title Alien, which differs very much from the second movie where it is an entire nest of aliens. So one of the things that I think is really interesting and powerful about the Alien movie itself is, you know, we think, especially nowadays, we think of hordes of monsters coming and attacking us. It's never the one. But in this case, you know, it's the isolation on the ship, nowhere to go except for space.
Would you say nobody could hear you scream?
And yes, no one can hear you scream.
Yeah, they're different types too. And that's actually why they react differently in the movies. Mm-hmm. Some of it was new movie. We don't care about continuity, but they actually did have some ideas about it. And the singular alien from the 79 movie was juvenile. It couldn't grow to its full strength or height because there wasn't enough nutrients on board the ship. There's also a side story about how the cat was chasing it around when it was in chest burster form, so it couldn't molt correctly a few times, which I love, by the way. The cat helped save them. Because the cats existed on those freighters for a reason. Sean's making a face people can't see. But they weren't just there because they were pets. They were there because they're ratters. Rats get on the star frigates and they eat through the wiring, so they would have rat cats, and that's what.
Oh, so I thought the little chest burster was a rat.
Correct. It was doing its job.
Good job, Jonesy.
Yeah, little things getting around with a tail.
Well done, Jonesy. But yeah, the one from the first movie was species XX121. The one from Aliens was different because they were full size and had all their different things.
Well, they were full warriors.
Correct. The one, what should have happened is the singular chest burster would have been able to molt into a queen, but that's not how it worked out. Because theoretically, when an alien knows it's singular, it becomes a queen because that's how their species works. When there's multiples, they take on roles, you know, like bees.
Yes. Or some West African frogs.
Yeah. Warriors, xenomorphs are most of what you see in the Aliens movie, but when they actually invade the hive, most of those are not. That's why they're so easy finger quotes to kill, because those are drones. They're there to serve the queen, build the hive.
How did they classify the alien from the third movie? Because it moved, even Ripley herself said that this one moved differently.
Because it came from a dog instead of a human.
It's because it was a dog burster. The alien takes on the physiology of the species it invades because it's a parasite and it absorbs your DNA like a mother would.
But so, didn't they classify it as something else?
Yeah. Dog burster is not the technical name.
Wasn't it like Skitter or something like that? Or Beeper?
It actually has a sort of kind of fancy name.
I don't remember. I thought I remember seeing it somewhere.
Stand by. I actually have the chart.
Or was it just a scout?
I don't think you see those until later. There are actually 14 variations. Maybe it didn't actually have a technical term, but they called it the runner. It's not technical, but yeah. There's also kinds you don't see in the show that have been identified and made canon too, which are actually kind of sort of referenced in the prequels we're seeing now. Like the Red Queen is actually the worst possible alien. Like, take a queen, turn it red, make it bigger. Because, needs to be bigger.
Which is one of the reasons that I like the graphic novels.
Yeah.
They go into all that. Different kinds of aliens.
in the comics, the comic series ran for 25 years, I think.
Did it really? Wow.
Yeah, it started in 79 and then it ran clear into the late 90s and then it stopped for a few years and then it was rebooted in the aughts.
Oh, sure.
Oh, just double checked. 30 years, more than 30. Wow. And it was across two publishers too, because Marvel did it and so did Dark Horse. It was really a Dark Horse product. I don't know what the actual count was, but if you ever tried to look up the total list, there was a comic for every movie. There was a run in original stories, and the original story run has more than 40 original stories. That's not just one issue each, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of issues.
That was by Dark Horse, wasn't it?
Yep, mostly. Marvel did a little bit. And then Dark Horse tossed a second line in after the origin stories for Space Marines. And then they had omnibus collections. And then they had crossovers, including Superman and Batman and Green Lantern. Because why not?
Because of course.
Also, Judge Dredd, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Vampirella, and the Wildcats.
Wow, Wildcats. Deep fucking cut there.
Yeah. Marvel only did a few things with it, and it's actually only super recently. But so theirs is the most recent you can get. They might actually be doing one right now. I'm not entirely sure. Yeah. And then, like Dwayne said, there were graphic novels and there were actual novels too, some of which are pretty fascinating and well written. They dive into what would happen if they got to Earth, and there's actually they do that whole storyline in one of the novel series, you know, a what if of the Alien franchise, which I found quite enjoyable. That was around the same part of my life I discovered BattleTech novels. Yeah. I was as sci-fi as Sean when I was 14.
Yeah. Good old BattleTech novels.
Those were good too.
I read a couple. Yeah, I remember.
And then of course we can talk about, and I'm going to make Dwayne say it, their arch nemesis.
The Predator or the Yautja?
Thank you. Predators are actually called Yautja.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I always thought it was weird that these two franchises crossed over. Like, not being into it, I never, it just always was like, okay.
Well, I mean, you do know it's all because of a random prop cameo, right?
Yeah. From what it's Predator 2.
Predator 2, Danny Glover's in the ship and he stops and looks at an alien skull on the trophy rack. Yep.
So yeah, I kind of want to go back.
I think
in
it
time.
Actually goes further than that, earlier than that.
It might have been done in the comics by then because.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah, because there was a lot of the, like I said, a lot of the graphic novels that I read, even the ones that were just titled Aliens, because they did have a spinoff Aliens versus Predator set line. And then they had the Predators by themselves. Even through the Aliens ones, you saw like it would randomly mention.
Wait, did you guys just skip past Aliens?
No, this is part of the history of Aliens.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's been in there since
we're not
the 80s.
1985 yet.
What was I going to say? Yeah. Makes a lot of sense from a writer's point of view, because the alien universe only has humans and xenomorphs, and the Marines are always talking about it's just another bug hunt, and obviously they had no idea what a xenomorph was, which implies there are other species in the galaxy to fight. It makes sense that the Predators would be one of them, because that's a serious threat to throw in a comic against the Space Marine squad. We get tired of using xenomorphs left and right. And
I
we know there must be others too, because bug hunt.
I always just took that line to mean like just really aggressive creatures on planets that they're trying to land on.
Yeah,
I didn't really take that as.
Yeah, but these are all, foreign planets.
Right.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Is,
like,
that is what it meant.
Right. I took it more as fauna or flora. What is it? Fauna. Like just like really rabid fucking bug alien creatures that I never took it to mean like, oh, they're fighting fucking. It's Predators, sure. Okay.
Bugs did not directly refer to Predators, but it was that line that allowed them to assume there was more to the universe than humans and xenomorphs. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Actually, the line itself, I'm pretty sure, was a nod to Starship Troopers because Space Marines.
Ah, that makes a lot of sense.
So let's talk about the supervillain. I'll let Dwayne go first again. Dwayne, talk to us about the true supervillain of this franchise.
Capitalism.
Weyland Yutani.
Weyland Yutani. Building better worlds.
Building better worlds. Like Hadley's Hope. That worked out well. Do tell us, Dwayne.
So Hadley's Hope is the staging ground for the second movie, Aliens, which also takes place on LV-426, which is the planet that was discovered in the very first movie. Sometime after the end of the first movie, Aliens, Weyland Yutani and someone else, the United something, United Federation of something. I can't remember what
that's the actual world government they're allied with. Yes, you are correct. The UAC.
United. Yeah.
United Federation of Planets. No, that's
no, it's no. Like the United Colonial Associate something. I can't remember. Yeah, but it's colonial something because that's why they're called Colonial Marines.
Correct. Technically, they work for the government, but they're paid by the corporations.
Right.
Well, yes, those individuals sent out a terraforming group of what they call mom and a shake and bake operation, or a mom and pop, a bunch of prospectors looking to make their claim in the cosmos. And they go up and set up terraforming nuclear reactors, pretty much, and try and make the air breathable. And once Ripley was found and gave her story to the company, one of the company men decided, let's go find out if this ship is actually there. And then shit just goes downhill from there.
So to answer your question, the governments that exist by the time of Aliens are the UA, which is the United Americas. The UAC is United Americas Colonies. However, they're actually the weakest government, because in the timeline of the Alien franchise, America did not keep up. Three World Empire is the largest government, which consists of Japan, what's left of the United Kingdom, and I think Russia. I don't remember what the third one is. They're basically the powerhouse of the world at that time. But there's also the Union of Progressive Peoples, which is a socialist bloc trying to take over. No, that's the one that includes Russia and what used to be Vietnam. And then the Independent Core System Colonies, the ISCS, which you hear about more in the new movies. But yeah, it's the UAC and Weyland Yutani that established LV-426. Correct.
Would you like me to go into more detail on that? I could go play by play.
We probably don't need to redo the whole movie, no, but it ends up being the ship is lost, like the actual mothership, the orbiting ship, not just the drop ship. And the colony is lost when it gets nuked.
Yes.
Which is a big deal that never gets played off in the movies it was supposed to, because Alien 3 was supposed to be a very different story. Originally, it would have been the survivors actually making it home, but things had gone poorly because the loss of a massive marine ship, the loss of the Sulaco, would have been a huge deal. Colony got nuked. Massive marine carrier disappears into the dead of night. It appears all hands are lost. It actually almost sparked like a civil war among the colonies.
Oh, wow.
And that's what Ripley and what's his name?
Hicks
come back to.
Huh, interesting.
That's what it would have been. But
well, they didn't lose the Sulaco though.
It was still up there. But I mean, it would have just drifted off into nothingness.
It crashed into the planet.
Oh, did it?
The orbit would have decayed. It was in orbit. Yeah, the orbit would have decayed, and the planet's gravity would have pulled it in when it ran out of fuel.
Oh, I thought they just left.
They left in they didn't leave in the Sulaco. They left in an escape ship.
No, they left in the Sulaco.
Yeah, they left on the Sulaco. They got on the drop ship, the second drop ship that Bishop flew down from the Sulaco on remote, because he was the only one that was, I was the only one qualified to pilot it anyways. And then they went up to the Sulaco, but well, first they had to go get Newt, and then they went back up to the Sulaco, and then that's when the Queen jumped out and said, no.
Sup, here to party.
Yeah.
In your chest.
And then she blew it out of the goddamn airlock. Again.
Oh, you're right. I'm getting my, what do you call it, lore mixed up. The Sulaco was actually destroyed at LV-426, but not during those events.
Yes.
The Sulaco was destroyed when it was fighting a different colony's marine ship, but it was the same planet, which is awesome.
Yeah. Wow.
The Sephora. destroyed Sulaco. Yeah. And then of course Alien 3 happens, which we can debate all day whether you think what
you like glossed over Aliens like so quickly. That movie's so amazing.
It is, but we need a whole show to go deeper than that.
Yeah.
And oh man,
you can do Aliens all by itself.
Yep.
It's like so different from like the first one's like a slasher horror and the second one's like an action thriller. It's so different and so amazing. But yeah, anyway, moving on.
That's another thing you could debate all day, which is better, and it depends on the person's taste. Like I like the first one better than the second, not because the second's worse, but because I love that tension horror. But also I have the patience to sit through the long 70s style scenes.
There's that.
Alien 3 is the same thing. We probably in the podcast are not going to take sides. Our audience can yell about it all day, but that movie is either loved or hated. There's really nothing in between. It's either reviled or loved.
It wasn't till the invention of the internet in like many years later that I was like, wait, everybody hates Alien 3? What the fuck? I had no idea.
Yeah, I won't say that it's my favorite, but I don't hate it.
Right. At the time, when I first saw it in the 90s, I was like, it's not as good as the first two, but okay. It's a good way to end a trilogy. I mean, I guess.
I love Aliens, and I love all things Aliens. I love the books, I love the comics, I love the video game, the movies.
Right.
So even if it's bad, in my opinion, I'm still going to watch it, and I do watch it anytime I see it.
And I will say, for the sake of this show, because of why we're talking about this topic, that's probably the last movie we'll discuss. There are more. They don't come up as much in the product we're going to refer to.
Yes.
Also, that randomly reminds me, for the audience who isn't going to hear this until after the fact, it will amuse you to know that we are, in fact, recording this during Alien Week. Alien Day, April 26th, every year.
Bum, bum, bum.
What's the significance?
Dwayne?
That I don't know. Was that the day it came out?
Alien Days are reference to the moon. LV-426.
Oh.
Got it.
See, Sean? Aliens wins that little bit.
All right, fair enough. I mean, there's Mario Day, which is March 10th, but
it's,
you know.
It's also officially recognized and promoted by Fox. Or whoever owns, I guess, Disney now.
Disney? My God. Disney owns Alien now. Yes, that
they
is...
do.
Why Disney? Why is it not on Disney Plus?
Gee, I wonder, Dwayne. That's a Hulu product. And actually, I did read somewhere it is going to go on Hulu exclusively once all the rights for Amazon and everyone else wear out.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, there were two more movies, of course, and possibly a third one if Disney greenlights it, doing basically prequels. And then this year, we almost got our brand newest Alien the RPG product on Alien Day, but they missed it by a few days. It's going to be a few days late, and the publisher was very sad. Which leads into why we're talking about the Xenomorph as a franchise. Because, as we've already done previously on the show, we're pretty soon going to start playing Alien the RPG by Free League, our favorite Northern European publisher.
Yes. Thank you, Free League.
You guys are awesome. Everything you make is awesome. Never stop. But yes. Were you in the original game we played, Dwayne?
I was.
Then yes, I would like you to talk about that. I'll do GM talk in a minute. You can do from the player perspective playing that game.
Yes. So when we first played, we ran, what is it, like their short, like,
we actually did their first real box set campaign. We just did it. We just did the cinematic version of it, which only took three sessions.
Yes. So
that was, what's it called? Oh, no.
I don't remember what it was called. It's not Something of the Gods, is it?
Jared of the Gods is the one that came out with the set. That was the original adventure you would have got when the game first came out. It was Destroyer of Worlds was the one we played.
Ah,
Destroyer of Worlds. That's what it was. Yeah.
But yes, I super enjoyed it. I was playing a Colonial Marine, Gunnery Sergeant Mason, Luca Mason. And you can imagine being a Colonial Marine you know, what I would be doing while in the game. However, there's a lot of psychological things that Tyler presented in the game, and there are mechanics that the game presents to you as a player that gives you different types of breaking points. Fear is a big factor in this game. Stress.
With its own dice.
Yes, its own dice.
Which,
go ahead. I'm sorry. But I really enjoyed it. The cool, I guess the coolest thing about it was, you know, the relationships that you already had with your characters and how they affected the storyline. People died often.
Yes, they did.
Which is awesome. Any game where people die often is usually pretty fun.
We churned and burned through those pre-made Marines. But yeah, the game itself is beautiful. That's the first thing I'll say about it. If you should get the hardcover. The PDF's obviously pretty too, but in your hands is something else. The art is amazing. And even the not horrible death, doom, destruction, alien art, just like Sean would love the space tableaus and the spaceships and the colonies. It's amazing.
I looked through the main book for mm-hmm. a bit, and it's a pretty beautiful book. Like,
yeah.
As an artistic piece, like the black print or the black paper with the white print, and just like the text doesn't even take up the whole page because it just leaves room for art and stuff, and it's a really pretty book to read through.
Yeah. The setting takes place in 2183, which is 5 years after Hadley's Hope, during that whole the galaxy's about to destabilize because of those events. Hadley's Hope is destroyed. The Sulaco has disappeared, God knows where, because Ripley is going to disappear for 45 more years before they find it. And then the prison colony is gone and everyone's dead, including a very important member of Weyland-Yutani died in the prison colony. So the setting is very destabilized. It does include elements of the new movies as well. So you've got those aliens and you've got the black goo and all of its effects exist.
Yes, the neomorphs.
Yes, we won't spoil everything because you should play the box set Destroyer of Worlds, but they were not expecting it when black goo made its appearance in the middle of a campaign about regular xenomorphs.
Yes, I was taken back. I was like, wait, what?
I had warned them the week before. They were like, this is so bad, and I'm like, it's gonna get worse. But there's two ways to play the game. Cinematic, which is meant to recreate the feeling of the film, which is what we did with that box set. High stakes, high drama, constantly worrying about breaking points because of stress and terror. Wounds are hard to deal with. And then there's campaign play, where you can actually be more survivable and you can actually play the alien universe like a sandbox and enter cinematic mode for those tense moments, but then come back out, which I also like. So you can recreate the alien movie, or you can just explore a grim, dark universe in the long term. Like, you could be a Marine, or you could just be space truckers, which is fun too.
It uses, or you could be a member of Hadley's Hope 2.
Yeah, you can be colonists too.
Interesting.
It uses the Year Zero engine, which is a cool system. If you haven't checked it out, you should. Tales from the Loop uses Year Zero, as does Mutant Year Zero. That's where it came from.
Oh, does it?
So it's a modified Tales from the Loop was modified for Mutant Year Zero, and this was modified from Tales. So they're all slightly different, much like 2D20 is all the same, but not quite same thing.
Right, right. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And
wait,
just
so is the game basically GM does nothing but make the players' lives miserable?
Yes, I do roll. You do roll, the GM does roll dice, but the GM only rolls dice as often as you do in Tales from the Loop.
I had never rolled dice in Tales from the Loop.
Yes, but you could.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they're going to attack you. Let's find out which attack they're using.
Right.
Oh,
like Tales from the Loop has rules built in to use dice as opposed to, say, Cult, which there is no yes or no. It's just no dice. That's the difference. Hmm. So Alien lets you roll or lets you not roll as you see fit as the GM. I only really did it to scare the crap out of them. It worked. Like, oh, let's see what happens. Oh, look at all those X high number rolls, but it's not necessary. I do find it, because like you do have to do some random rolling to create aliens, and like a lot of their powers are like breath weapons in D&D where they have to recharge, so you got to sometimes roll for recharge, etc., etc. But you could just do it without dice. Every three turns the power works and you'd be fine.
But your players would not.
Yeah. Most recently, they're actually recreating what was the most beloved supplement to the original Alien role-playing game from the 80s. It was called the Space Marine Technical Manual, and it was the defining thing for the franchise at the time. Like, it came out shortly after the Aliens movie, and it like revitalized the RPG, and it kicked off a bunch of the stuff that you saw in some of the comics. So Free League has created the Colonial Space Marine Operations Manual, and that's why we are launching our second playthrough of Alien, except this one is a campaign supplement. So we are going to run our game in seasons. At least three. Neat. Yep. Not all at once, obviously, but spread out across time. At least three seasons of your Marines, and we'll see what happens to them. But the book itself is pretty sexy. It's got tons of new stuff with creatures and rules for scenarios and encounters, and then it's actually got the campaign built in that you can also just break apart into random adventures you could play separately.
That's cool.
Yep.
I love Alien.
Yes. It was a surprise hit for us too. We're like, we love Aliens, so we're going to try this. No one's going to watch us play this. And then for a long time, it was our number one show. People love Xenomorphs. Do we know what the status is of the new movie? We could end on that, but I can't actually remember.
I don't think.
I heard.
I think it's just in limbo.
Yeah, it's in limbo still.
The last thing that I heard was May of next year.
Sure, COVID.
but COVID.
I guess the last thing I'll say then is Free League Publishing, to get these licenses, there's actually a production company and brand management that helps produce and package these games for these big titles. And if you think Free League did Alien so well, it might excite you to hear that the company that works with them for Alien is also the license holder for Dune, which we know was also gorgeous and super fun to play for Modiphius.
Oh, nice.
Also Blade Runner, Avengers, Game of Thrones. So who knows? Maybe we'll get a sexy ass Blade Runner next. That'd be awesome. I'd play some Blade Runner Cyberpunk.
Man.
Yeah. If you want to know more, we recommend you definitely check out the game. And if you want to hear us talk more about Aliens, like deep diving each movie individually, like Sean wanted to do, you should let us know. Because we definitely like to hear feedback and hear from the audience. Tell us you want to hear the thing and we'll make the thing happen. We could, in fact, talk for an hour just about Aliens and pulse rifles. Yeah.
Then we could talk about all the different video games that they have for Alien.
Yes.
I don't even know.
Some great, I'll be terrible. Honest,
before we sign off, Alien 3, like, a lot of people hated the movie, but they loved the video game.
Yeah, that was one of the better video games.
Really?
Interesting. Oh, man. Running around in ventilation ducts with a grenade launcher, just popping them off.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Wow. Okay,
I remember that, yep. Usually we would tell you what episode's next, but we're not going to anymore because, as those of you who listen regularly have found out, sometimes we release them in a different order. So we say next week and you hear the one you heard last week. So
but what other topics might we be talking about in the hopper?
Cult Divinity Lost. You have the list in front of you.
Damn it, Tyler, you and your logic. back to notes.
There was another beefy one we were gonna do.
Not there. Should be enhance.
Enhance. Go back.
Holy shit. Here we go. Okay. We were gonna. Oh, and also we were talking about deep diving Arkham.
Yep.
Lovecraft Arkham, not Batman Arkham.
Or maybe a little of both.
Maybe, yeah, because they're sort of kind of connected. We were going to talk about playing different types of not anthropomorphic animal type characters in tabletop RPGs, and then non-combat action scenes, or how to run combat differently in a how-to. So that'd be cool. The best ways to run modules and how to run modules. So that'd be fun. And then key NPCs in the presence of villains, how to do a good villain in a game. So yeah, we got
there was another horror one too.
Well, there's Cult and then Alien and Xenomorphs. And then I don't have anything on the list, man. I'm sorry.
were we going to talk about splats?
Yes.
Yeah, we were. That is obviously on the long-term list, and we're actually going to try to do one session per splat, but and then talk about if as the two versions between World and Chronicles, one session would cover both versions. There was another one we're going to do very soon. It's a very thick, like occult style heavy topic. Wasn't Warhammer, but that is coming too.
Vampire?
I'll just listen on that one.
that would fall under the splat list. Plus, that's going to be a series, and you know it.
Yeah.
It's going to be one episode. What else are we playing?
I don't know. We just made a huge shift.
Funny you should ask, Tyler. What are we playing?
Well, we have Mage of the Ascension right now that soon begin to become Vampire the Masquerade 20th Anniversary Edition.
Yes, we have this is Dune. True. Dune, maybe some Delta Green later on. I want to run Lancer, which is mechs. Mechs are awesome.
Yep, switching to Fallout on Wednesdays.
Yeah, Fallout's going to be coming through.
Thursdays, switching to Alien the RPG from Gothic Horror Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
Friday is switching to Ravenloft for a while and then back to Scarredlands. Friday, our new show is going to be Call of Cthulhu, and then our second season of No Time for Reality, our Chronicle of Darkness that spans GMs and players.
You bastard, running that without me.
And then Saturday, part one is going to be Warhammer Fantasy, and part two is going to switch to Vampire 5th Edition. And then Sunday, part one is going to be Unknown Armies.
Ooh.
But don't worry.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Whatever that topic is we're forgetting, we will remember and record it, and you'll hear it soon.
I mean, I got Star Trek written down here.
That again, that's a series too.
Yeah.
But I think that's enough for now. Definitely sounds got good. Their curiosity whetted, and we'll be back soon with another creepy topic. Once again, I've been Tyler. Sean's been Sean.
Hello.
Dwayne's been Dwayne.
Yeah.
Oh, and Sean, I almost forgot.
What? What did you forget, Tyler?
Why was the vampire interested in the New York Times?
Oh, fuck me. I don't care.
He heard it had great circulation. Goodbye, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
I hate you so much.